I think one of the things that gets lost is that one of the reasons why, and this is not the reason, but one of the reasons why you and Pat and James and some other people have ascended the way that you have is because you've been on stages and you've given this awesome talk, and that builds trust and it just makes it easier for people to buy your book or your product or whatever that is.
I'm Amy Porterfield, ex-corporate girl turned CEO of a multi-7-figure business. But it wasn't all that long ago that I lacked the confidence, the budget, and the time to focus on growing my small but mighty business. Fast forward past many failed attempts and lessons learned, and you'll see the business I have today, one that changes lives and gives me more freedom than I ever thought possible, one that used to only exist as a daydream. I created the Online Marketing Made Easy podcast to give you simple, actionable, step-by-step strategies to help you do the same. If you're an ambitious entrepreneur or one in the making who's looking to create a business that makes an impact and a life you love, you're in the right place, friend. Let's get started. Welcome, my friend. We're back for another episode of Online Marketing Made Easy. And let me tell you, sometimes I just stop and I'm in awe of how many episodes that we have put out into the world. I mean, this is episode 665. That's not even including all the bonus episodes that I put out. I just think that's pretty wild. And I just want to say thank you for coming on this journey with me. And I hope that you have found immense value in this podcast. And also, I hope you've shared it with fellow entrepreneurs because that helps me get my message out. And I cannot thank you enough for just continuing to be part of this community and hopefully sharing it with somebody that you think could get immense value from it as well. So thank you. All right, so let's get into episode 665 with my friend and guest, Mike Pacchioni. Now, Mike is an international speaker and he's a speech coach, and he specializes in helping executives, athletes, and entrepreneurs deliver smart and engaging messages to audiences of all sizes. He's trained more than 10,000 employees from companies like Nike and Microsoft and Slack. I've actually had the pleasure of working with him many times. In fact, I hired him years ago for some of my biggest presentations, and not only did they turn out to be extremely successful, he helped me feel confident in presenting. And he's also a master storyteller, so he really showed me what it looks like to add incredible stories to a presentation to bring it alive. Okay, so what are we going to talk about today? Well, actually, we're going to discuss a few things. We're going to touch on some surprising advice when it comes to public speaking, things that can translate to speaking online, on webinars, on masterclasses, and on stages. I've also asked Mike to share his journey, because I know that many of you will deeply relate to how he felt diving into entrepreneurship from a comfy job. When I met Mike, he had a really good 9-to-5 job and he left all that behind to become an entrepreneur. And I remember the journey with him so very much. He was freaked out, but where he is now is so incredible. And I think hearing his journey will inspire you to keep going or inspire you to take the leap if you haven't done so already. So keep listening. We'll also talk about his early experiences with creating a lead magnet that resulted in 2,500 new subscribers and a podcast experience that generated $120,000. And by the way, it wasn't his podcast, but he still made $120,000. So I thought that was interesting. I love this chat because Mike shares lessons learned, industry secrets, and an inside look at how he's built a six-figure business where he works 4 days a week with no ads, no staff, outside of a virtual assistant, which I think everybody should have. He's also going to share how to work with one-on-one clients, like many of you do, without getting burnt out. So as you can see, this is a juicy conversation. We have a lot to cover, so let's get to it. Hello, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Amy, it's finally happening. I'm so psyched to be here.
Okay, listen, we've been friends for years and years and years and years. We go really back. Like before we started recording, we were reminiscing about all the times. But I realize I think I said your last name wrong in the intro, but I already recorded it. I'm not re-recording it. So how close did I get? Unless I butchered it. I said Pacchioni.
Well, that is a good Italian pronunciation that nobody says in America.
Well, I am Italian. So what do you want from me?
Wait a minute. I didn't know that about you.
I am. My grandma is full-blooded Italian. So I guess my roots are showing. But listen, how do you say it?
Yeah, it's Pacchione in America. But Pacchione is the authentic Italian. So you're actually correct. It's just not.
Okay, so I don't need to re-record the intro.
No, you don't.
Okay, we're keeping it. But Mike Pacchione, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Amy. It is so fun to be here. I've loved working with you. And whenever someone talks to me about working with me and they mention Amy, meaning you, like I know I'm going to get a good person. So,
aw, I love that. And I know that some people I know have worked with you, which is really cool. But people are like, what do you mean worked with him? So let's talk about this. So before we get into all the things, tell everybody what you do in business. What does your business look like?
Yeah, totally. So I'm a speech coach, which sometimes people understand what that is. Let me unpack it for you. You know, when you're scrolling Instagram or whatever, and there are these ads, usually for conferences, where there will be like this speaker and this speaker and this speaker and this speaker, and they've got their big smiling face and their name listed there, maybe like a topic or a book, some sort of descriptor. Those are people who have signature talks. So like Amy came up with one. Well, you've done more than one in your life, but like when 2 weeks notice came out, you had a talk for that book. I help people come up with their signature talk. So I help them with writing it. I help them think about what the slide should look like. And I help them with here's how you should deliver it. And that gets into like sometimes I'll even record for them. Like I think I've done this for you before where I record a voice memo of me presenting it just so you can hear someone besides yourself. I've done this for a while. It's been more than 10 years since my first side project. First time I worked with Amy. I counted, Amy, there have been, including you, 11 of my clients have been on Online Marketing Made Easy, which is pretty fun.
Oh my gosh, that's cool.
I know. So I help people on both a one-on-one level and a group level. Some other things that might be helpful for people to know. I'm a late bloomer, which I think is good to know. I have ADHD. And I think most importantly, like this weird job that I didn't even know was a thing until I was into my 30s has allowed me to stay home with my family, be there for my wife and for my 2 kids. We have a 10-week-old right now who I try to help out. I mean, as much as I can help out with a child who won't take a bottle, I help out with. But like this weird job has helped me to be home with them more and to help out friends and to do all these great things. So I love it so much. And I love that I've been able to work with people like you and Pat Flynn who were my clients and were actually paying me. And I was learning from you like how to do the entrepreneurial thing. And I love it so much and I'm so thankful and I'm excited to talk about it with you.
So we're going to talk about a lot today. In the intro, I mentioned like we were going to go over so much and I want to go into you leaving your corporate job and starting your own business. But before I go there, I didn't say something in the intro that I've got to say, and it can be public knowledge because Michael Hyatt has said this publicly. But do you remember that in my first talk that you helped me with, it was for Michael Hyatt's stage, right? Many, many, many years ago, like at least 6, 7, 8 years ago, would you say?
I think it was 10, and you were known for Facebook ads.
Okay, that's how long ago. It was like 10 years. I was known for Facebook advertising, but we did a talk more about a hustle mentality, hustle culture. I remember a big saying in my talk was like, don't worship at the altar of hustle. Like 10 years ago, I was talking about that. I didn't learn this 10 years ago. I'd say in the last 5 years, I stopped hustling. But anyway, I talked about it because I struggled with it. So I was honest about it on stage. But it was Michael's event and he does a survey afterwards and I scored higher than Michael Hyatt at his own event. Now he's talked about this publicly, so I'm not here bragging about myself. I'm actually bragging about Mike. Mike put that talk together with me and I was really proud of it. So if you want to know if he's any good, Michael Hyatt's one of the best speakers out there and graciously told me and publicly said that I scored higher. So I thought that was really cool.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool. That's right. I had forgotten that. What I always remember about that talk is that there was a guy who came up to you at the very end and was basically crying and said that he worshiped at the altar of hustle and that your speech was motivating him to go a different direction.
Totally cried. A man, a grown man. I thought, holy cow. So that talk was epic. I should probably look for it and see if we can revive it. But anyway, Mike knows his stuff, really unique in terms of how he works with you. And so I'll tell you at the end, if you ever want to work with Mike, I'll tell you how to do that. But let's talk about your journey first. So I want to back up and start from the beginning of entrepreneurship. You know that I'm a big believer that people should be strategic about moving from a full-time job to entrepreneurship. in that they should have a little bit of a plan and not dive headfirst without setting themselves up for success. So I want you to talk about your transition. Did you have a side gig first? Did you deal with imposter syndrome when you went out on your own? How did you know in your heart it was time to take that plunge from a full-time gig where you got to talk about what you were doing? It's like me working with Tony Robbins. It was a really cool job you had. And then you thinking, I'm going to go out and do my own thing. And then like, how did you get the courage to leave your job? And then I know I'm handing you a lot right now. Also, you got to talk about the email that you sent me when you took the plunge.
Oh my gosh. I think about that email all the time. Okay. So I feel like a lot of entrepreneur origin stories are, I had this job that I hated and I hate going in and blah, blah, blah. I loved my corporate job.
You did.
I don't think I'll have another corporate job, but if I did, it would be hard to match this. So I was working for a company called Duarte in Silicon Valley. Nancy Duarte is the CEO there. She is a wonderful human being. The short version is I flew all over the world for about 8 years. Going to different companies, mostly Fortune 500, some Fortune 100, some Fortune 10, teaching them how to do presentations. And that was the writing of it, that was delivering. And in hindsight, I probably should have left earlier, but it was fun. It was, especially once I had it down, it was like, I got paid to fly to Chicago for 2 days and stay in some hotel I would never stay in by myself and meet up with an old friend. Like it was awesome. But there did reach a point where two things happened. Number one, the biggest impetus is we were having a child. So I know there are people who keep getting on planes, but I just didn't want to do that. And the second thing is I did want to know what I was actually capable of. For the last few years there, I was still doing very good work, but it was like I was able to lead this workshop while I was also thinking about what I should put on my grocery list, right? Like it was that dialed in, which is, good and bad, but you can't do like your very best when there's not a little bit of fear, and there was no fear left with that. So one of the things that was just kind of like God smiling on me was when I first got that job. To get that job, I had basically an audition. So think about it. I'm going to be leading these trainings. They need to know that I'm good. Well, I needed that job. So I had I basically invited a bunch of friends. I rented a room. I was living in Portland at the time, rented a room at Lewis and Clark University. And I practiced the workshop so that when I got in front of the Duarte people, it'd be awesome. Well, I impressed one of those friends so much that he just started plugging me in with other people. So my friend Chase connected me to a Corbett bar right away. I had no idea what to do. I had no idea what to charge him. I helped him. I was too chicken to charge him anything, but we've all done that. But his talk was awesome. He had the talk at the conference. So he paid $0. To have the best speech at Blog World, whatever year that was.
And when you're just starting out, even like a side hustle, you do a lot for free. That's normal.
Yeah. And then Chase introduced me to Pat Flynn. Now he's not like Pat Flynn yet. In fact, when I told friends, Pat Flynn, at the time there was a quarterback for the Seahawks named Matt Flynn. People thought I was talking about him. They're like, no. This guy, he runs this site, like big affiliate marketer guy. And Pat, always remember our first call. He'd given one speech before. He had tried to memorize the whole thing. And I was like, oh, dude, we're not doing that anymore. And Pat still to this day, like credits me with just opening up what was possible with speeches. He realized that you could make it fun. You could be super creative. All of Pat's, he is just so wonderful on stage now, but like I helped unlock that for him. And so there are a bunch of things like that, working with Amy more than once as a side project. So when I look back at it now, I wouldn't have phrased it this way at the time, but it's like, one of the things, Amy, that you always talk about is bet on yourself. And I think if you're not careful, as an audience member, you can hear that like a dramatic bet on yourself, like throw water on your boss's face and go out and no plan. And listen, if you are the type of person who makes big bets like that, you 10,000 on a blackjack hand, go nuts. Enjoy that. That is not me. I am way more Amy Porterfield. I think of it as making small bets. So basically, that's what I was doing for all that time. I was proving to myself that I was good enough to help other people. I was figuring out how to charge. I was figuring out how to price. I think the first time, I think when I first helped Pat, like, actually, you know what? I didn't even have a website yet. I'm picturing literally the email. And all that I had learned at that point is that it was good to have more than one level of price. But I like typed it in an email. That's what it was. So I'm like figuring that stuff out so that by the time I left Duarte, I'd made a bunch of contacts. I had proved to myself that I was good. I'd proved to myself that I could make money. I always had a side project while I was working at Duarte. And that, I think, made me a better employee of Duarte. And of course, it helped me when I left. One of the things that worked out really cool is people like Amy and people like Pat. As I was doing my full-time job, you ascended during those years. So I think a lot of times people hear my client list and they hear Amy and James Clear and Pat Flynn and people like that. And I think one of the things that gets lost is that one of the reasons why, and this is not the reason, but one of the reasons why you and Pat and James and some other people have ascended the way that you have is because you've been on stages and you've given this awesome talk. And that builds trust and it just makes it easier for people to buy your book or your product or whatever that is. I always think of it like the speech helped you ascend. It wasn't like Amy of 2024 wasn't Amy of 2014 when I first met you. So I think make small bets is a really big one. Years later, I was working with a presenter on a talk about innovation. I found out this is like a big thing in innovation, by the way. Like Apple, when they released the iPhone, I remember there were all these articles about what a big bet it was and da-da-da. It wasn't a big bet. They had made a bunch of small bets. They knew the iPhone was going to work. They had already done the iPod. They'd already done iTunes. Obviously, phones were a thing. So it wasn't a big bet at all. Major League Baseball, if you're a baseball fan, just did like basically the same thing. Like last year, they changed a bunch of baseball rules and there are all these articles. Will it work? Will it work? Baseball already knew it would work because they've been running it in the minor leagues for years. So that's a principle of innovation you can apply to your entrepreneurial journey. Make small bets so that when you make the big one, you can be pretty darn confident it's going to work.
So Mike, talk to me about imposter syndrome because I kind of planted that seed, but I know you had it because we were on this journey together. Like I knew where it looked like on your end. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. Okay. So I had imposter syndrome as a speech coach way back in like 2014, the first time I did a major workshop and everybody seemed to be buying it and everybody kept buying it. And for the most part, I've never really had imposter syndrome when it came to my own ability to coach others on speaking. Now, the business part, Amy, is a little different.
This is a good distinction. You all heard him say, like, I know I'm a good speech coach. Like, I know I do a good job there, but running a business, that is where the imposter syndrome came in for you. That's a very good distinction. So, okay, talk about that.
You were my very first email. I said, I just quit my job. And then you put me in touch with one of your friends. Well, our friend now. And she asked a question that was actually out of enthusiasm, but it freaked me out. She just said, it was either what's your business plan or what was your launch plan? But it was some like business jargon where I like didn't have an answer. I was like, oh no.
I don't have a plan.
I made a huge mistake.
That's so true. Where when you start your own business and you start engaging with other people and they're talking this language or they're saying this stuff, even my students that are listening now, like funnel, that word funnel really trips them up sometimes. And they're like, I don't have a funnel. What? Like, what's a funnel? And you automatically think, I am not cut out for this. It's so quick. I remember like it was yesterday thinking, I am not a good entrepreneur. I don't even know what I'm doing. So how did you get past stuff like that?
I had made six figures before I knew what a funnel was, by the way, for anybody listening.
I love it.
I emailed you some panicked email that hurts me to reread, but I remember your response and it rung to me as true, which is you said, this email brings me life. And you said, wait till you read back on it a few years from now. And totally, totally did. I think for me, some things I've learned about myself, I get overwhelmed pretty easily. I get overwhelmed by jargon in particular. So some things that I've learned are like, just because someone's talking jargon doesn't mean they're smarter than me or that I need to even know that jargon. So that was like one thing. Another thing is that it was just smarter for me to not try to figure out funnels and all this stuff when on a fundamental level, all that my business needed to be was getting introduced to someone who wanted to pay for a speech. That's all it needed to be. So I quit my corporate job in May of 2019. I would have occasional freakouts the rest of the year, which by the way, that's also because June 2019, we welcomed the child into the world. But I remember looking at my numbers at the end of 2019. When I say looking at my numbers, y'all, I mean, an Excel spreadsheet that had two columns, person's name and how much they paid me. Like that was looking at my numbers. And I made $84,000 in the second half of 2019. And I was like, huh, well, that's pretty good. The second half of the year when I had a new child into the world and I didn't know what I was doing. That's pretty good. I've made a lot more money since then. And I think what I would say about imposter syndrome is this. Let me give you a little story. So I grew up outside of Philadelphia. Did you watch The Office?
Yeah.
You know, like the Ben Franklin episode?
Oh, I don't know.
The Ben Franklin impersonators?
No.
Okay, well, listen, this is a real thing in Philadelphia. So Philadelphia, obviously, very historical city. There are these people. There are official Ben Franklin, George Washington. Okay. My friend's mom was dating the guy who played Ben Franklin. So I would go over to his house after school in high school, and just Ben Franklin would be walking around there. And Amy, he was always in character. Like, we're talking, it's like 5 at night. He's still got bifocals on. He introduced himself to me. Now, the guy's name is Ralph. He's like, "I'm Ben." I was like, "Whoa, what a weird coincidence." And my friend, and Nate's like, he like leaves the room, and Nate's like, "His name is Ralph." Nate wasn't a fan. I've thought about this a lot of times since then. There was an Office episode with all these Ben Franklin impersonators, but this was the guy. He had like he had a baseball card. He was, you know, the mayor would have him for events and all these things. And, you know, for a long time, I was like, I processed that as like, "Oh, this guy's a big loser. Like, it's not even his life." And then there was a time where I was like, "Well, that's kind of cool. He was that committed to it." And here's where I've landed on it. Like, I was talking to Jen Olmsted about this recently. That guy, like, actually is an imposter. Like, he literally is not Ben Franklin. Ben Franklin is dead. That is provable. Everybody knows that. And yet, he seemed to have more faith in his own imposterhood than a lot of us do in our entrepreneurial journey. So,
amen. Preach.
Yeah. Ever since I thought that way, I was like, I am not allowing fake Ben Franklin to have more belief than I have in myself. And most days that's true.
That is so good. I want you all just to really take in what Mike just said there, because Ben, what was his real name? Ralph? Ralph, really, he knew what he was doing there. He just gave us a really great lesson. So you are right. If Ralph can be Ben, we could run our businesses.
If Ralph can be Ben, I can
figure out a funnel.
Yeah.
We are online marketers, which means we have unique needs. And there are so many options out there for paid media. Sometimes it's hard to figure out where should you go to reach your ideal audience. But here's the thing. Have you thought about LinkedIn ads? LinkedIn ads empowers marketers with solutions for you and your customers, and it allows you to build the right relationships and drive results and reach your customers with meaningful content. You do not want to sleep on LinkedIn ads. And here's the thing, 79% of content marketers said LinkedIn produces the best results for paid media. I hear it from so many of my peers. And I know you're doing important work. And with that, you want to make sure that the work you're doing is getting in front of the right people. And that's what LinkedIn ads will allow you to do. So let your marketing efforts connect with the right audience and get a $100 credit on your next campaign. So if you go to linkedin.com/Amy, you can get that $100 credit. So that's linkedin.com/Amy. Terms and conditions apply. I know you're focused on marketing and selling your digital products, but I know many of you also have physical products, and I want to talk about Shopify. Shopify is a user-friendly commerce platform that helps you, my dear online entrepreneur, build an online store and make more sales at any stage of your business. They're the force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other businesses at every size. Let me tell you why Shopify is an online entrepreneur's dream platform. It's because it helps turn your browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout experience. In fact, it converts 36% better compared to other leading e-commerce platforms. Yeah, loving that. And I don't know about you, but as an online entrepreneur, my customer's experience, especially when it comes to checking out, is so important. Plus, not only do they support your customers, they support you as the entrepreneur. Shopify's award-winning help desk is there to support your success through every question and every step of the way. There's a reason Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/made easy, all lowercase. So go to shopify.com/made easy now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/made easy.
So yes, imposter syndrome came in. You wrote me an email, like literally like, I can't do this. This is a disaster. And I knew you'd look back and be like, oh no, I got this. I got this. So you mentioned that you work one-on-one with clients. That's the main way you make money, right?
Yeah, that in group. Yeah.
Yep. And so on this podcast, a lot of the times I talk about creating digital courses. And one of the things I say with courses is if you want to move away from working one-on-one, you can then create courses and you're not trading time for dollars. And a lot of the times that time for dollars is like in a negative way. You don't want to trade time for dollars. You want to create a course. However, one-on-one works. And if you love it, I'm going to celebrate it all day long. And you, my friend, have made a beautiful living where your wife, who is a nurse, is not working right now. And you're supporting a family of four with one-on-one revenue coming in and you're crushing it. So number one, I never, ever will say it's a bad thing to do one-on-one work. And number two, if you love it and can figure out how to make it work for you, do it all day long. So courses aren't for everybody and one-on-one works if you like it and you want to do it. But you got to be careful with it because you can get burned out. There's one of you, many of them, and they all want your attention. So how do you manage this one-on-one work so that it's lucrative for you, but you don't fully get burned out with all these people needing you and bringing on people and all of that?
Yeah, totally. So first of all, this is the year of a course, FYI. But
You did not tell me that. Keep me updated.
Well, I have a buyer, so that's like, okay.
Okay, let's go.
This coming to my first conferences, so yeah, here we go.
So true. I love that.
There's something that you once said that's etched in my brain, which was that you had quit your job with one boss and wound up with eight bosses. And I've been very careful about that my whole entrepreneurial career, that I'm only taking jobs that I want to talk to the person. So there was a guy that I met last week. I don't know what possessed me to ask this, but this is like, you know, a discovery call where usually you're asking about like goals and all this stuff. And for some reason, I was just like, are you a dick? He goes, I don't think so, but I've been running my own company for a while now. So there might be some things in there. I just don't want to work with someone who's not going to be fun and rewarding to work with. So like that's a thing that's been etched in my brain. But to answer your question more directly, I think there are a few things that have really helped me working with people one-on-one. Number one, and maybe other people would be better at this, but charging hourly is a total nightmare from my perspective. I have such guilt when an hour goes by and like, I don't know, I've just been writing on post-it notes, but it's like, there are no good ideas. I'm like, well, should I charge for that hour? And then other times I'll be like walking the dog and that's where my best ideas happen. But now do I charge them for walking my dog? I found that when I charge hourly, I would wind up screwing myself over. I would undercharge out of guilt, and that's not going to get me anywhere. So what I found is way, way, way more successful to do is to charge by the project and specifically by the outcome. Because what I don't want is for people to start calculating the hourly. The moment they start calculating the hourly, it's, oh, I don't know, I could do that, blah, blah, blah. So what I want to do, and I'm not always great at this, but I'm getting better at it, is when we're talking, I'm like, what is the outcome we're searching for here? Do you want to sell more books? Do you want to sell a course from stage? Do you just want to feel awesome leaving the stage? And then if I can equate that to the amount of money that I'm charging them, that goes over so much better. And the reason why that's a big win for me is because, candidly, I don't have 8 good hours of work in me every day. So I just do better when it's like I'm able to do 2 or 3 focused hours of work, working on someone's speech. And then like some of the email and other stuff on the side. But I have found that charging by the project, not doing hourly, and then equating that charge to the outcome has helped me so much.
Oh, that is so smart. I love that. And those of you listening that you're like, I don't know if not charging hourly would work, really get creative there, because I think you're right that it takes a lot of stress off you. And those that you are serving aren't being like, 10 hours for that much money? You just don't want them going there at all. I love those tips as well. And also, I was thinking when you were talking, you've built your revenue to multiple 6 figures with no advertising, no staff outside of a virtual assistant. and working a 4-day work week. And right now with a brand new baby, you might even be working less than 8 hours a day, it sounds like. So what do you feel allowed you to grow your business so lucratively where you do have ultimate freedom? I really do believe you work great hours and you kind of call the shots on when you work. Like, how did you do that? And how did you avoid working yourself into the ground also? As we know, as an entrepreneur, a lot of us tend to work more hours than we did in our 9-to-5 job. So how did you figure that out?
Yeah, so a couple of things there. This is going to sound ridiculous, but watching Jerry Maguire had like a profound effect on me when I was 18. It's like, I don't want to be that guy.
Why? Why did it have that kind of impact on you?
Because family matters and it's so obvious. And then years later, there's that nurse who shared all the regrets of the dying. So I look at it like, well, we've got the answers right here. So why do I want to go down the trap of working too much? Not to be clear, like there are times where I have to really chase it. But so I go backwards from there. And that I think I am tempted to work more, but I always come back to those things. It's like, what are you doing? Like, how would this hour better be spent? So I always go back to that. I think my success has come boiled down to a couple of things. Number one, I'm good at what I do. So I feel like that doesn't get talked about enough. Like a lot of times we just go straight to strategy. But like the actual first part is being good. So I'm good at what I do. I know that. I have the credentials that say that. I have worked with people who would point to me being good at what they do, yourself being one of them. And I think like I've just made it, this is going to sound really basic, but I've made it really easy for people to like me and refer people to me. So there are some little things in there I do. Like as an example, in my group coach, there's a welcome package. I send them like a book and I send them some nice Oregon coffee and things like that. And I will like send surprise gifts to people, food, coffee, things like that, that makes them like me. But the biggest thing is that I do good work and I think it's easy for people to refer. Also, I can't believe I haven't said this yet. Myself speaking from stages, I don't love being the center of attention, which I know maybe sounds kind of strange for someone who I actually like love speaking on stages. I just don't love the part after that. So I only speak on stages 2 or 3 times a year, but the trust that you build speaking from a stage, it has enabled me to fill group coaches without sending out a single email or having a single webinar or running a single ad. When people see me on a stage, it seems like, whoa, that guy knows what he's talking about. I want to learn from him. It's helped me fill 2 group coaches in a row. And I feel really, really blessed with that. But strategically, it's also like, it makes sense. People trust you when they see you on a stage.
You've been able to grow this business to multiple 6 figures because one of the reasons is you get on stage and that builds trust with people that want to work with you. You're like good at your craft and you do your craft. They see that. And I totally agree. I saw you speak recently and I'm like, dang, he's just good. He's so good. I said in the intro, one of my favorite things about how you get on stage and what you do is your storytelling. You're just like really good at weaving in those stories and drawing people in. And so that's a great calling card for sure. That's a great calling card. Now, I want to take a sharp turn. I'm going to go in a really weird direction right now, but it's something I wanted to make sure. I told everyone in the intro, we're going to kind of go everywhere with this one. But I want to talk about your list building efforts because you've actually done a really good job with growing your email list. And you're proof that you don't need a huge email list in order to have a lucrative business. So when you began building your email list, you created your first freebie. And I want you to talk about that process. Like, how did you perfect it? How much did you spend on it to get it created? How did you promote it? I gave away in the intro that I think you had like 2,500 people sign up for this lead magnet. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So talk about what was the lead magnet? How did it come about? Did it bring you money? Talk about that.
I felt really thankful that I had worked with you and Pat because you both really like made obvious to me the value of the lead magnet, the value of the freebie. Yeah. So I was on this podcast in 2019. It's still a popular podcast, but at the time it was like blazing hot. So it's Ian Cron's podcast called Typology. It's all about the Enneagram. 2019 Enneagram is like 2016 Black Panther, right? Like everybody, like that's all anybody's talking about. I felt like in my worlds anyway. And he wanted me to come on and talk about the Enneagram as it related to public speaking, which I love things like that. And I thought to myself, well, I've worked with Amy Porterfield. I know I should have a freebie. I'd been on a big podcast before when I worked at Duarte, and I had no call to action whatsoever. So the net gain from being on this huge podcast was like 12 people following me on Twitter or something like that, right? So I was like, no, I'm going for it. And part of it was I just really wanted to create this freebie. But I created this freebie, the Enneagram and Public Speaking. Each number of the Enneagram had its own set of tips. And so one had a set of tips, two, et cetera, et cetera. I wrote this whole thing out. And then I wanted to run it by people who were of that personality type. So someone was a one, I forget who it was, but like one of my friends who was a one, I sent the email to, I was like, hey, does this feel familiar and correct to you? And she said, yes. I got a bunch of feedback from other people that, among other things, enabled me to cut the size of that PDF in half. What I had done is each number got like a story and a bunch of bullet points. Almost everybody was like, dude, we don't need this story. So it just became bullet points. What was cool about that is my welcome sequence for that, like basically everything I deleted became my welcome sequence. But I created that. I got an actual designer to help me out. I think a lot of times we're just like, okay, well, I can do this myself, go on Canva. One of my friends was a graphic designer. He owed me a favor, so I had him do it. I probably spent 20 hours writing that PDF and getting feedback, refining it. It's like really, really good. And then on that podcast, I discussed it as if it was really, really good. And I think that gets left out a lot. I think a lot of times podcast stage, wherever we are, we're just like, yeah, I got this freebie. You can download it if you want. And I just knew it was a great freebie. I gotten feedback from everybody. I knew that it would hit. And then it hit. I had no idea, 2,500 people. Remember the morning the podcast dropped, seeing in my Gmail just like the list of people who had signed up. And when I got to 10, I was like, yes, like someone, you know? And then it kept going. Like for 2 weeks, I was like, oh my gosh. So I knew from working with you that 2,500 was not going to happen frequently, but that was a pretty big deal. This has been 4.5 years. More than half of those people are still subscribers.
Oh, so great.
Frankly, I read a good email. Yeah.
I love that. Okay, so you created this really great lead magnet that it made perfect sense for Ian's podcast because it was about Enneagram speakers. What exactly was it again? Say it again.
Yeah, so it's an Enneagram and public speaking. So each different type got its own set of tips for
how to be a great speaker. Like if you're an Enneagram 2, how to be a great speaker. Got it. Okay. So it made perfect sense for that podcast. You talked it up. You didn't just say, hey, by the way, I've got this great freebie that you can get at the end. Here's where to go. But you really talked it up. Now that lead magnet and that podcast episode led to money. Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay. Talk about that, because I also gave this away in the intro and said you made $120,000.
Yeah, it's something like that. I was trying to calculate it recently. And yeah, it's in that neighborhood, probably a little north of it now. Now, to be clear, that wasn't like the next day. But from people downloading it over time and seeing that freebie, that led to people referring other people, that led to people wanting to work with me. Like, frankly, I should have been more prepared. It's etched in my brain, one of my regrets. There was a really, really big company. Someone had downloaded it and she called me and she said, hey, we'd love to bring you in. What would it cost for you to give a keynote speech? And I'm just like totally unprepared. I don't remember what number I said, but whatever it was, I did not say it with conviction and confidence and I never heard from her again. But yeah, between workshops and one-on-one work and referrals, yeah, like 120, 130.
Love it. So not only was it a lead magnet that got you 2,500 leads over time, it also brought in over $100,000 of clients. And it's a lead magnet that you didn't just have to use on Ian's podcast. You could use in different ways. So could I link to it in the show notes? Do you have like an option for it? Okay, cool. I'll link to it in the show notes. But okay, wait, I'm not done with you now, because now that we're talking about speaking, so this lead magnet kind of leads me to my next question. And that is, that I can't have a speech coach on my show. I know we talked about a whole bunch of things, which is rare. We tend to not do that on this show, but you were an exception. But can you give me 2 to 3 pieces of your best advice for people that want to speak on stage? I know a lot of my listeners right now would love to get paid to speak on stage eventually, but they'd probably be doing it for free right now just to get the invite and the experience. So what might you tell them? Maybe something that they might not expect or might surprise them, or maybe not. They just need a good reminder.
Yeah, totally. Let me give you a few things that are not like the first things you would read on ChatGPT or something, right? So from a delivery standpoint, everybody thinks that they talk too fast. Damien, you think you talk too fast. It's almost impossible to speak too fast. I mean, if you think about it, people listen to podcasts at 2x So are they just really gifted listeners? No? Or maybe, I don't know. When someone has told you that you speak too fast, what they actually mean is that you need to give them a break. So I always actually tell people, speak fast. If you look at the top 10 TED Talks, they are all speaking pretty fast, but they all also give breaks. So one of the things that you can do there to help yourself is when you write your notes, instead of writing them in paragraph form, write them more like song lyrics. And that should help you to just naturally take a pause. So that's one thing. I think when you are putting the speech together, like the writing part of it, one of the things that you can do in the prep that will help you quite a bit is come up with a preliminary outline and just say to yourself, how do I want to allocate this time? Most of the time when I work with people, the questions they're asking is like, is this part good? And that's not the right question. The whole speech should be good. You should have two or three speeches worth of stuff that got cut. The real question is just like, what makes for the best 30 or 45 minute talk? And one of the ways you can figure that out is to say section one, section two, section three, how much time do I want to spend here, 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 here? A lot of times people will want to start with a story, which is a great instinct. Sometimes that story is 5 minutes, like could be fine, but that means that you're going to cut a bunch of material. So maybe there's a quicker way of getting there, even though you're no longer starting with the story. So figure out your time allocation. And then I did talk about stories. I think this is another thing where everybody's like, tell stories, man, tell stories, tell stories. And that's good advice. But actually it should be perfect your stories, which means like rehearse them. I think what a lot of us do is we just kind of write down on a piece of paper and then I'll tell the story about Amy or something like that. And if you do that, you'll wind up with a story that's fine, maybe even good. It'll be longer than it should be. You will probably include details that don't really matter. So perfect the stories, run through them several times, figuring out how you can chop and chop and chop. I'll reference number one TED Talk of all time, Sir Ken Robinson. There are two stories in there that I have seen used at multiple conferences by multiple companies. Those stories combined, they're told back to back, those stories combined under a minute. If you can fine tune it, like that's a great place to get to. And then the last thing with slides, if this is like a really good opportunity, it's worth the money to hire a designer. I think a lot of people are just like, yeah, I can do my own slides. The value of great design is through the roof. So hiring a good designer is a great way of just upping the perceived value of your presentation.
Amen. Those are all really good. And I love what you said. Like, let me give you some that you won't necessarily find on ChatGPT. That's just great copy in general. I like it. So I know people that are listening right now, they're like, okay, I might want to work with this guy. So where can they find out more about you? If they want to work with you, where do they go?
Yeah, totally. So I do a group mastermind that I just think is the best. I've heard that from multiple students. I love it so much. It gives me so much energy. And I help people one-on-one. So here's where you should go. I've got a freebie that is specific for listeners of Online Marketing Made Easy. You can go to bestspeech.co/Amy. And there you're going to get a bunch of things that I think are like pretty awesome. Number one, you're going to see the Enneagram. We'll do the Enneagram PDF there just so you can see it. Even if you're not into the Enneagram, that's a great one. The next one I love so much, and it was actually Amy's idea way back in the day. I think the second time we worked together, you were like, I just really need help with the intro. You should have a service where you just help people with the intro. So instead of that being a service, that's my new freebie. And it is, y'all, I cannot explain to you how many times I work with people and the Achilles heel is the beginning. They're like, I don't know how to start. So in that freebie, I'm going to give you my specific strategies when I work with people one-on-one and examples of what each strategy looks like. And because we all love Amy Porterfield, I'm going to go through the old files and one of the introductions that Amy and I put together back in the day. I forget which conference this was for. I'm going to show you that whole thing and I'm going to dissect for you why we wrote it the way we did, why we said this line, why we did it this way, stuff that got edited out. So all of that, bestspeech.co/Amy.
Perfect. And we'll link to it in the show notes as well. Mike, it was so great having you on the show. This is long overdue. Thank you so much for sharing your entrepreneurial journey and your tips for speaking on stage. I really appreciate it. And I'm really thankful for our friendship.
Amy, right back at you. Thank you for helping make my career.
Oh, stop. All right, my friend. I will talk to you soon. And thanks again.
Thank you.
So there you have it. I hope you found this episode valuable. I just really love Mike. And if you're thinking about working with him, I highly recommend you check him out. When Mike and I started discussing him coming on the podcast, I just knew we had to share his story, not just about tips to speak on stage, but I wanted you to hear from one entrepreneur to another about what it looks like behind the scenes and how scary it can be to go out on your own. And I love the idea that he had some people he worked with before he left. I forgot that I was part of his side hustle, that he was working with me while he was still in his 9-to-5 job. And I think that makes the story even so much sweeter. So I think my favorite part is when he shared about the lead magnet on the podcast that led to work. I think the next time you create a lead magnet that, let's say you got invited on someone's show and you get to talk about your lead magnet, the next time that happens, I want you to think, how could this lead to more sales? Like, what can I do that this lead magnet will then lead to people working with me, especially if you work one-on-one? And I think the fact that they got his lead magnet, they liked this guy, this was great, valuable content, they wanted to learn more and they wanted to work with him. So sometimes it's just as easy as having a really good lead magnet that people think is so valuable and they want to go to the next step with you. If you are a List Builder Society member of mine, then you know that I teach you to create lead magnets that are so good, people think, oh my gosh, this is so good, I'd pay for this. And also think, this is so good, I wonder what else she's got. This is so good, I wonder what else he's got. And that's what make them start to explore what else you've got out there. So thank you so much for tuning in with me. And again, I hope you found such great value. You can always send me a DM on Instagram. I'm just at Amy Porterfield on Instagram, and tell me what you thought about this episode. I'd love to hear from you. All right, my sweet friend, I'll see you next week. Same time, same place. Bye for now.